Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. Today, we're exploring a new report from the Chief Investment Office of UBS Global Wealth Management entitled Investing in Private Markets with UBS Wealthway. Two of the authors of the piece will be here to tell us exactly how private markets fit into a 3L strategy, that is, adopting a liquidity, longevity, legacy approach to better enable investors to align their portfolios with their goals. As well as understanding how a lower return environment is driving investor appetites for alternative instruments, including private markets, the panel will also consider the upside potential and the benefits in terms of longer-term investment focus from a greater exposure to private markets. We start with Mariana Mamu, Head Advice Beyond Investing in UBS Chief Investment Office. Mariana, many of your colleagues from all across UBS, in fact, have talked to us over the years on this programme about the 3Ls. How do private markets fit into that 3L strategy? And maybe you could speak a bit as to the sort of UBS Wealthway approach and how that shapes the space too.
So the UBS Wealthway is a comprehensive framework that helps investors achieve their lifetime goals as well as preserve and grow their wealth over generations. So it consists of the three strategies that you mentioned as 3Ls. The liquidity strategy, which is designed to meet short-term needs. The longevity strategy, which is designed to meet lifetime goals. And the legacy strategy, which is focused on wealth maximization and having a positive impact on society. Illiquid assets such as private markets can be incorporated in both the longevity and the legacy strategies, depending on investor circumstances. While the liquidity strategy can help manage any risks that are associated with the liquidity.
Presumably, Mariana, lower predicted returns, if we compare, say, the next 15 years to certainly the last, 20 or 30, are driving investors to consider alternative instruments. Where do private markets sit in that mix?
Well, certainly this is one of the reasons, and certainly this is why we are having more conversations with investors on the topic of alternatives and specifically on private markets. Private markets can help with their increased returns so that they can provide this additional return premium that can help achieve greater wealth accumulation and greater wealth transfer opportunities as well as support achieving lifetime goals.
What about private market performance then? Maybe if we turn to look at that, Mariana, next. Obviously, generally speaking, private markets outperform public markets. But it was interesting in the report, I was struck by this idea that there's not only that kind of stark data, but there's also this sense that in terms of aiding a longer term focus, and maybe we'll talk a bit more about longer term time horizons as well in a moment, it can really help investors to do that. Can you talk about some of the mechanics of why that's the case?
Yes, private markets can also help investors focus on the long term. Private market funds are generally buy and hold investments with 10-year commitments. Typically, investors fulfill capital calls, what we call investments, in years 1 to 5 and can start receiving back distributions in the subsequent years 6 to 10. So while investor capital is locked up during this time frame, the liquid characteristics of private market investing is conducive to implementing strategic operational value creation, which illustrates a differentiated active ownership approach to driving returns versus public investing. And as you mentioned, additionally, the illiquid nature of private markets prevents investors from selling out during market dislocations and during very turbulent times, which also, of course, helps them to stay invested and with their performance.
Well, yeah, and just on that point then about illiquidity, can you give us a sense of how concerned clients and investors are, Mariana, when you speak to them about this balance, striking this balance between, you know, the higher growth potential, higher potential income levels, which we talked about at the top, and this real and perceived illiquidity? Is that kind of the number one worry when you talk to clients about this?
Well, it is the number one consideration when they ask how much illiquidity they should include in their portfolio. And there the UBS Wealthway framework helps, because by looking at the specific circumstances and objectives of each investor, we can understand what objectives they have, the amount, but also the timing of these cash flows. And these timings basically identify how much liquidity you might need over time. So therefore, exactly how much one would allocate allocate, for example, in the longevity strategy, could change over time and would differ depending on an investor's risk tolerance, on their time horizon, and even on their spending flexibility. So if they have a higher risk tolerance, a longer investment horizon, higher spending flexibility, or even the ability to tap into external liquidity resources, then they could accommodate more illiquid allocations. For example, for the longevity strategy, up to 20%. Whereas for the legacy strategy, which has this multi-generational time horizon, our standard guidance is to allow up to 40% to private markets, because there is basically no liquidity requirement in a longer time frame, and this low emphasis on day-to-day volatility.
Hmm. It really strikes me, both from browsing the report and from talking to you, Marina, that it really underscores this idea that planning, really rigorous and thorough planning, has never been more important. And I wonder, in a sense, we've had this extraordinarily turbulent and unpredictable last 12 months, haven't we? Has that added to this feeling that, you know, it may be a bit of a cliche, but planning has just never been as important as it is now, right?
Yes, for sure. I mean, as mentioned, planning is always important, because it's important to be invested based on your objectives and having a clear overview of your entire wealth and how you can allocate the wealth in a way that will enable you to meet these objectives. And for sure, turbulent times are linked with increased nervousness and emotions, making it a bit of prime time for behavioral biases and investment mistakes. And to mitigate these biases, investors need to remember that exactly it's important to, on the one hand, invest according to their goals, invest according to their risk tolerance, avoid the temptation of checking their performance too frequently, and diversify.
Has the last year, I wonder, changed another aspect of this, Marianna, perhaps around client or investor perceptions relating to family or to intergenerational issues?
I think it's always been important, but potentially it has crystallized a bit in the questions around next generation, and also what are you leaving behind in terms of impact for society, and how you can plan ahead to maximize these transfers and achieve these objectives that you have. This multi-generational time horizon means that, in fact, more clients, even older clients, can still have illiquid assets, which is a bit, not obvious. Usually clients in their 40s are more interested in having illiquid and having these conversations, and if you're of course older, you think potentially that the time horizon is limited until like the end of your lifespan, but in fact it could make sense for wealth preservation to also include illiquid assets for growth over the next generation.
Karim Sheriff is strategist in the UBS Global Wealth Management CIO. Karim, thanks for being on the programme once again. Just to start off, we're obviously going to talk about the sort of bigger picture, but I did ask Marianna about this, and I just thought it might be worth getting a perspective from you as well. If we're looking at private markets in the context of this report, it's front and centre that, you know, it forms a really good part of this 3Ls strategy, which obviously we've spoken to so many colleagues from all across UBS about before. Maybe just start us off by explaining how private markets fit into that 3L strategy, you know, why it's a good fit and why it makes sense at the moment.
Well, I think private markets is very applicable to longevity and legacy strategies. When you think about the goal of the longevity strategy, it is to provide for your lifetime needs. And private markets can really help investors with long-term horizons to gain additional returns, which in turn can help, you know, keep portfolios from being depleted from spending, or allow investors to spend more during the course of their lifetime, or even retire earlier. And in the context of the legacy strategy, I mean, obviously here the goal is different. These are excess assets that have been identified beyond what is needed for the investor's lifetime, and as such, private markets can help in accumulating greater wealth for the next generation.
Well, it's interesting. I want to talk to you about time horizons. And clearly, you know, if we look through the next, 10 to 15 years, it looks like we're going to be in this lower return environment, certainly compared to the preceding 20, 30 years. Why is that the case? And what does that mean for the here and now in terms of changing the way investors could and should look at private markets?
Well, when you look at the returns of a traditional 60-40 portfolio, over the past few years, I mean, I would say even decades, I mean, it's been around 7.5%. As per our projections for future returns, that same portfolio is expected to generate about 200 basis points lower, and that of course has to do with, you know, like a lower level of starting yields, and obviously, you know, like a more challenging environment in terms of valuation. And this means that there are serious concerns for investors to not meet their financial goals. And so to generate sufficient returns, we believe alternatives, and in particular private markets, can help generate that additional returns, you know, like given our view that, you know, they can provide this 1 to 3 percentage point outperformance versus traditional markets, given the illiquidity premium that they can allow investors to capture.
And Karim, is this something that's really being driven then in terms of the growth of these, the interest in these alternative instruments, which includes private markets? Is this being driven by private investors, or is it a similar story across the mix if we look at the big institutional players, for example?
No, we really observed, you know, like an increase in this type of investment across a range of investors, including institutionals. I mean, if I could give an example, U.S. pension funds, you know, when they allocate to private markets, we have seen an increase in that allocation of about 4 percentage points to around now 20% over the past decade. And we already see high allocations from endowments and global family offices, with allocation over 30% for some of those investors. So it's really a broad-based phenomenon that we see across portfolios, across the different types of investors.
And much of this driven, obviously, by the fact that there's various sort of upsides with private markets. We know private markets have outperformed public markets. But I wonder, is there something to be said as well, Karim, not just for that outperformance, but for the way that private markets can help investors get that longer term focus right? You know, we've already talked a little about longevity. Sometimes it can be hard to get that focus and retain it. But I guess if you have a weighting of your investment portfolio into private markets, that sort of does help deliver that, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, obviously, private equity investments do require long-term investment time frame. But while investor capital is locked up during that particular time frame, the liquidity characteristics of the asset class allow the implementation of strategic operational value creation, which, you know, like illustrates a different approach to driving returns versus public markets. And additionally, if you think about the liquidity nature of the asset class, I mean, this can prevent investors from selling out during market dislocations, while at the same time taking advantage of attractive valuation opportunities during those dislocations. And as such, private markets are particularly attractive for investors looking to participate in long-term secular trends and also, you know, like match to some extent their long-term liabilities.
I did want to ask you one thing, Karim, which was about the last 12 months, or just over 12 months, actually. An extraordinary, a turbulent, unprecedented and unpredictable year we've all been living through. Has it changed some of the conversations around private markets? Has it changed maybe some of the assumptions, I don't know, both the investors, the clients have been making, but also for you and your colleagues? Has it changed this landscape, the way it seems to have changed almost everything else?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I think what we have seen over the past few months is actually an increased interest in the asset class, especially for those strategies that can provide access to growth stories post-pandemic. You know, with the asset class taking center stage as an important leg to the economic recovery, as a key tool in the context of portfolio construction, and also as one of the key drivers of innovation, we've definitely seen an increase of demand for this type of asset class, and this is likely to drive the industry to grow further in the next few years.
Karim, Mariana Mamu spoke before about the risks of illiquidity in the context of private markets investing. Can you perhaps, finally, just talk about how Wealthway addresses that risk?
One of the benefits of Wealthway in this context is that, given that it helps segment investors' goals and objectives and also clearly define the different time frames, you know, like this particular strategy can allow to carve out, you know, like some liquidity to mitigate some of those risks that the asset class can have and provide some comfort to investors in adding illiquid assets.
And that's Karim Sheriff bringing us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. You can listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.